We're holding on Sadiq Bey's Amud Aleph, the second line. Continuing talking about the story with Yaakov fighting the Malach. So later on, the Navi Hoshea tells over the story briefly. He's telling the Jewish people, he's reminding them of their origins and why, and you need to be more like the others, and you need to realize that Hashem runs things in the world, and Hashem is the one who allows you to stand, and so on and so forth. So the Navi Hoshea says we have this as part of the Haftarah of Parshas Vayetze, since it mentions a few seconds later about Yaakov going to Haran and marrying Rachel and Leah over there. Anyway, the pasuk says Vayoser al Malach Vayuchol. Now the word Vayoser means he fought, but it also means that he became a master over al Malach to the Malach Vayuchol, and he was able and he was able to overcome him. Bacha Vayischan and Loim. The pasuk continues. He cried and he pleaded with him. So, any idea, Minasa Salami. Now, when it says Vayosar al Malach, who is it Vayosar? Who is it who came out on top? So, any idea, Minasa Salami. So, from that total posse, Vayosar al Malach, you wouldn't know who actually beat who. Does it mean that Yaakov beat the Malach, and became his master? So Vayosar al Malach, Vayuchol, and he beat him. Did Yaakov beat the Malach? Vayosar. Yaakov beat the Malach, Vayuchol and Yaakov was able to prevail, or Vayoser or Yaakov Malach, or maybe the other way around. And Malach came and overpowered Yaakov, Vayuchol, and he was able to overpower him. But when the Malach says after the whole thing was over, and he tells him, you've contended with a Malach, Sarisa, again, the Russian Sar, means you've become a Sar over the Malach. So you necessarily need to say Yaakov Nasa Sar the Malach means that you're so the Navi Hoshea clarifies for us, which we might not have known from the Tosif, from Sukkim and Parashas Vayishlach, that Yaakov is the one who beat the Malach, by Yosar Malach. He contended with the Malach, and he beat, and by Yufal, and he was able to prevail, and he became the Malach's master. Now, when the pasuk continues, Bacha Vayischan and Loi, he cried and pleaded with him. Also, Eini Yodea Mi Bacha L'Mi. Who cried to who? After all, fine, even if Yaakov beat the Malach, he was injured. Maybe he's crying and pleading to the Malach to let him go or something. No, sure, remember, Yaakov back in the story, in Parshas Vayishlach. Vayomer Shofeini, that the Malach says, let me go, because it's morning, and as we learned yesterday, it's my turn to say Shira. And Yaakov says, I won't let you go until you bench me. So therefore, clearly, so it has to mean that the Malach cried to Yaakov and pleaded with him, let me go. In fact, the continuation of the pasuk there in Hoshea continues, Beis El Yimtze'enu, with some Yadabre Manu, he will find us in Beis El, and then he will speak with us, Rashi on the pasuk in Vayishlach explains, this is also part of that. The Malach is pleading with him, let me go. You want me to bench you? You want me to rename you? The Hashem is going to appear to you in Beis El, and Hashem will do it himself. You don't need me to do it. And Yaakov says, no, you're not getting away with that so easily. You're going to give me the bracha. You're going to ratify that I got them, that I got them the brachas honestly and didn't trick them away from Esav, and then I'll let you go. And then he was forced to do that. And yes, Hashem ratified it many years later when Yaakov was in Beis El. It was a short time afterwards. So that's the meaning of the pasuk. Now, what does it mean now, in Vayishlach, when it tells about this, when it tells the story, again, it says that the Malach tells him, Pisarisa im Elokim bein Anoshim, that you have proved that you have become a master over Elokim and over people. Now, the word Elokim, in this context, Elokim also means Hashem, but here Yaakov didn't fight with Hashem. So the usual translation is that Elokim over here means a Malach. Many times we find the word Elokim, or B'nai Elokim, used to refer to Malachim. We learned yesterday, for example, we had a passage, B'nai Elokim, referring to Malachim. But here, the Gemara is taking in a different sense. The word Elokim sometimes also means human leaders. We find it used of Dayanim, for example. So here, the Gemara is going to take it that it refers to the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, where anybody who has smicha ish mikri ish from Moshe Rabbeinu can be called Elokim, as we find by Dinin Mominus a number of times, Ab Elokim Yavod Var Shnehem, and other such expressions, that those can be handled only by basin of smuchim. So when it says that he's a sire, that he's a master over Elikim and Anoshim, so Omar Rabba remes Ramaz Loy, without the Malach was giving him a hint, Shasidim Shnei Sorim Lotzis Nenu, that two princes are going to come from him in the future, two hereditary princely families, Rosh Boilashim Babel, the Nasi Shabbat Yisrael. One is going to be the Resh Falosa in Babel, who was the governor of the Jews in Babel. He was always descended, Ben Achaben, from David, and he had tremendous power over the Jews in Babel. However, in Babel, they couldn't give smicha, so he lacked that. So relative to that, then the Zemer Chachamim over there, and the Resh Chalosei himself, are called just Anoshim, ordinary people. And then you have the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, that's hinted at in the word Elikim. So in other words, you're going to have descendants who are going to be a sar over the Elikim, and they themselves are going to be Elikim, they're going to have the Smicha Ish Mithyish. So in other words, so you had for hundreds of years, so at first you had actual kings from Yaakov's descendants, but during the whole time of the second Mishmekdash, and thereafter, there was a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, and there was his counterpart, the Resh Chalosa in Babel. So now, the Gemara is saying that the Malach is hinting to Yaakov that this is going to be how it's going to be. Mikan Ramaz like Golos, so we see that the Malach is hinting to him there's going to be a Golos, because the Resh Golosa, the head of the Golos, means, in other words, there's going to be a Golos, and there's going to be a governor of the Jewish people over there. As we learned yesterday, the whole fight that whole night represents a Golos. So now the Malach is telling him that the one thing that's going to come out of that during that night of Golos, when you're going to be fighting the whole night against Esav and against Ishmael and all that, there's going to be during that time there's going to be a Rosh Golos. Okay. Now that we're talking about having talked about then the Resh Chalosa and the Nasi, the future leaders of the Jewish people. So now the Gemara digresses. Now we've finished talking about the matter of Yaakov and the Malach, and now we're going to digress to other topics about the future history of the Jewish people. So here we know we had later on at the end of Parashas Vayeshev, the Sarah Mashkun and the Sarah Oifim have their dreams, and Yosef interprets them. Now we know Yosef interpreted the dream of the Sarah Mashkun very favorably. You're going to get back your job, Paras. You're going to be pouring the cup for Paras like you used to. And meanwhile the Sarah Oifim's dream, he tells him you're going to be hanged. So the question is, what was so great about the Sarah Mashkin's dream that Yosef finds a reason to interpret it favorably? Now, in other words, it was meant to be, obviously, the dreams themselves are meant to indicate the future, but we know the Gemara in Brachas tells us that the meaning, what actually results from the dream, to a large extent depends how it's interpreted. You have, for example, a whole story with Abaya and Rav over there, where many times they had the identical dream, and yet this fellow, Bar Hedya, would interpret it favorably for Abaya and unfavorably for Rav. So the same dream that the Sarah Mashkin had could have equally well been interpreted unfavorably. Why did Yosef interpret it favorably? So what we're going to say is that the reason is because Yosef saw that there were hints in his dream to the future good fortune of the Jewish people, and therefore he realized now that this means, in other words, the person who had this dream, therefore, obviously means Hashem is sending a message through him about the future of the Jewish people, but also that he himself, therefore, is going to get a favorable interpretation. So the Sarah Mashkin, and you have a lot of, now you look at, also you look at the Sarah Mashkin's dream, you have a lot of details that seem to be unnecessary. He describes over there, I saw a vine, and the vine had three branches, and it was blossoming, and it was blossoming and producing flowers, which then developed into grapes, and I took the grapes and squeezed them. If it's just a matter of the dream about the guy himself, then you don't need all that detail. I saw a grapevine with three branches, and I took the fruit and I squeezed it, and then gave the juice to Paro. So therefore, so understanding that the details over there represent the future history of the Jew, represent the future history of the Jewish people. So first of all, it says Vagefen Shlosha Sarigim. The grapevine had three branches. So what does the three branches represent? Amar Abba, Amar Rab. English is, first of all, the grapevine itself is a metaphor for the Jewish people, as we have a number of psukim in different places where the Jewish people are compared to a grapevine, one of them being in Tilim. It actually points out, you have a pasuk, Geffen Mitzrayim Tasiya, that Hashem, the pasuk describes how Hashem took a vine out of Mitzrayim and replanted it in Eretz Yisrael, which refers to the Jewish people. There's many other psukim that take up the same metaphor. So, it was Shlosha Sore Geyim. The word Sorigim we're taking as an acronym for the word Sore Geyim, noble, proud nobles, and high-ranking nobles who are rich and who have close connections with the government, Ayotim Yisrael b'chol dor v'dor, who come out of the Jewish people in every generation. In every generation, there are always three Jews. There are always three Jews who are particularly rich and well connected with the government. Sometimes two of them are here in Bavel, and one of them in Eretz Yisrael. Pamim Shishnayim, the Eretz Yisrael, the Echad Kan, and sometimes two in Eretz Yisrael and one here. In later times, Bavel would stand in for the whole Golos, so sometimes you have two of them together in Eretz Yisrael, and one in the whole rest of the Jewish world, and sometimes the other way around. When Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba darshan this, Yehivu Rabbanu Neinayu, Rabbanu Ukva, Rabbanu Nechemya, Bnei Brat Yedirav, the Chachamim gave a look over and were gazing at Rabbanu Ukva and Rabbanu Nechemya, the grandsons of Rab, that they all realized these must be, in all generation, the two who are in Bavel, the two who are rich and connected with the government. The names Ukva and Nechemya in particular recur a lot of times in the family of the Reish Kavusa. So it's very possible that one or the other of them, or maybe one and then the other, was Reish Kavusa, and therefore, yes, they were particularly well connected like that. Okay. So that's one explanation of Sarigim. Rava, Omar Rava says a different explanation. The word Sarigim stands for Sore Goyim. Eilu Shloisha Sore Goyim, this refers to three Sarim of the Goyim. Where they defend the Jewish people in every generation. Sorim can mean, so Rashi says it means malachim. So we know each nation has its malach, has its sar l'mayla. So in every generation, though, there are three of them, the shamayim, that stick up for the Jewish people. Which for Pashtus means that down here on earth means that their countries then are favorable to the Jewish people. So in every generation, you have something like that. Maybe also, I mean, I think there are other mafroshim who explain that Sore Goyim can actually mean just noble, Goyish nobles down here. You also, and there's been an enormous amount of anti-Semitism throughout the centuries, but there's always been, in every generation, there have been some rulers in different places who did stick up for the Jews. Let's get more into the details of what the Sara Mashkim saw in his dream. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, and Geffen Zeholvam. Rabbi Eliezer says the vine that the Sara Mashkim saw refers to the world in general. Shlosha Sarigim is Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and the three branches of it refer to Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. The body of a grapevine is made up of its branches, and the same way Avraham Yitzchak in the entire world, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov are really the only important thing because everybody else around them were not bothering to accomplish what Hashem put them in the world for, and therefore it's as if Hashem had planted a vine of the entire world and expected that all of it should be good, and in the end all you have is three branches of it that are good. So therefore that represents them. The Hichifairachas also nitsa, when he continues that blossom and produce flowers, that refers to the imahos. The flowers, Rashi points out, are not as significant. They're not as tough and hard and noticeable as the branches. So therefore, the branches will represent the others, and the flowers, which are smaller and weaker, and will represent the imamas. And we continue that the grapes ripen and that it produce ripe grapes. So that would refer to the shvatim, it says. So ultimately you have the branches. What's the purpose of the branches and the flowers on a grapevine? The purpose is to produce fruit. So there you have all the Nehemiahs worked together and put in their effort. This is a stronger others and the less strong Nehemiahs, and produce the fruit of the shvatim. So that's how Rabbi Eliezer learns that part of the dream. And again, the idea would be that then Yosef realized if he has a dream like that represents the Jewish people so far, then it must be Hashem is also meaning that he himself is going to have a favorable interpretation. But Amalei Rabbi Yeshua, but Rabbi Yeshua says, "V'chimaron lo la'odem mashahaya." Since when does a person? What's the point of seeing in a dream what already happened? If this is meant to be a dream about the future, v'alei in maron lo la'odem, alav mashah also bias. Of course, the idea of a dream of a person is going to be told something in a dream. It should be something that's yet going to happen. So not just for Sam Ashton personally, but for the Jewish people collectively. Ella, so Rabbi Yeshua says, no, get and zet Torah. The vine refers to the Torah, which is the purpose of the entire world. Like a vine is the purpose of a vineyard. The three branches represent the three leaders of the Jewish people when they were taken out of Mitzrayim, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. The Hishafarachas also mitzah Eva Sanhedrin. When it continues that the flowers develop refers to the Sanhedrin. So like again, you have the stronger and more noticeable branches, and then you have the weaker flowers. So that refers to, you don't just have Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam themselves leading the Jewish people, you have the whole Sanhedrin backing them up. If Shiloh say I'm nothing. When it says it's clusters ripen into grapes, Eloh Tzedekim, Shiloh Chodor, that refers to the Tzedekim in every generation. Well then, in that case, so Rabbi Yeshua says, so it's referring to the future of the Jewish people, and therefore again, Yosef was happy to hear such a dream, and therefore he interpreted it favorably. Well, the Gemara says, Amar Rami Gamliel, Adayim Tzrichin Onu LaMudori. Rami Gamliel says, this really isn't enough. With all of that, we also need to hear what the Mudori has to say. The Mudori is Rabbi Lozor HaMudori, the Tanner Rabbi Lozor HaMudori. HaMudori means that he came from the city of Modin. Anyway.
One question.
Yes.
The grapevine, the three branches, why the Gemara doesn't say it refers to the three Basi HaMikdashos?
We're gonna have soon an explanation that it means the Shalosh Regalim. But maybe because that wouldn't really be such a good thing. After all, it shouldn't have been that there has to be a third Beis Hamikdash in the first place. There should have been that there's one Beis Hamikdash and it should last forever. So maybe in fact, if it could refer to the three Batei Mikdash, then that would actually be kind of a sad thing to be told that the Jewish people are gonna have to go through two Golosim first. But yeah, there is another explanation that's going to relate it to the Beis Hamikdash. Yes. Actually, so now you're going to have, yeah. So Omer Nami Adayim Tzuchin Onu L'Modoy L'Mukim Le'Kulei B'Chad Mokrim. Rabbi Lozor HaMadori's drasha on this pasuk explains that all the details about that grapevine in the Sanamashkin dream are all referring to the same place. Now, Rabbi Eliezer's and Rabbi Yeshua's are referring to different places, different generations. But here we can have, like this, Rabbi Lozor HaMadori Omer, Gefen Zeh Yerushalayim, the grapevine refers to Yerushalayim, Shloisha Sirigim, Zeh Mikdash Melech V'Kohen Gadol, and the three branches refer to the three main institutions that you find in Yerushalayim, the Beis Hamikdash, the King, and the Kohen Gadol. The Hichafarachas also mitzah eva kirchekona. When it continues that it blossomed and produced flowers, that refers to the young blossoming koyanim. Kirchekona, literally, actually the word kirche literally means blossoms, and it means like the koyanim whose beards are first starting to sprout, the young energetic koyanim. So you have this grapevine of Yerushalayim produces three major institutions that guide the Jewish people, and within that you have the young Koyanim, men who are eager and zealous and do the avodah. If Shilu Ashkelasei Anovim, and when it finishes off, its clusters ripen into grapes. Even Nesachim, that refers to the Nesachim that they would bring in the Beis Hamikdash. So yes, it does refer to the Beis Hamikdash, but not necessarily like you're saying three Beis Hamikdash, because at that point in Jewish history, that wouldn't really be such good news. Okay. More opinions on it. Rabbi Shurban Levi Mukim Lav Matonis. Rabbi Shurban Levi refers to explain that the entities mentioned in that pasuk refer to the gifts that Hashem gave the Jewish people. The Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi Gefen Zu Torah, the grapevine refers to the Torah. Fine, that's like Rabbi Yeshua had said before. Shloisha Sarigim Zeh Be'er Amud Onanumon, and the three branches refer to the three major gifts that Hashem gave the Jewish people in the desert. You had the well to give them water, the pillar of cloud to clear the way for them and protect them and so on and so forth, and the man for them to eat, which in turn were in the schus of the three tzaddikim that Rabbi Yeshua had mentioned before. Rabbi Yeshua had mentioned Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Well, the Gemara tells us in Tainus that each one of these three things came in the schus of one of them, the well in the schus of Miriam, the clouds for Aaron, and the man for Moshe. The hichachayrach has also a mitzvah. Then the pasuk continues that it blossomed and produced and then produced flowers. That means Elu HaBikurim. So that refers to the Bikurim that the Jewish people would bring in Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem gave us those gifts in the desert and kept us going over there. Then we come into Eretz Yisrael, out of the desert, into a place with luscious fruit. And when they finish developing, you bring them as Bikurim. So therefore that part of the passage refers to that. If Shiloh goes down of them, when it says it ripened and became grapes, Elu Nesachim, that refers to the Nesachim that come from those grapes on the Mizrach. So that's another explanation. Rabbi Yumi Abba has yet another explanation. In particular, he's going to explain that it's referring to the Golus of Mitzrayim, which now is about to start as a result of this dream. What's going to happen? The guy's dream. Yosef interprets it. He ends up, when he gets back his job 2 years later, he finally remembers to tell Pare about Yosef, and then Yosef rises to power, and eventually all the Shavatim come to Mitzrayim, and Golus Mitzrayim begins. So therefore, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba says that the dream is presaging the Golus, which is about to start now. There's an interesting thing that ever points out in the Sikha that whole Golos therefore began with dreams. Yosef's dreams, the Sara Mashkin's and Sara Oifim's dreams, Pare's dream, because the whole concept of Golos is really a dream. We say in the Pasuk, you know, Kechomim, when the Gola comes, the whole thing will have felt like a dream. Because in other words, a dream is not reality, and neither is Golos a true reality. The true reality is Gola, which is waiting for us. Third of Yirmiyahu Ba'aba says, Geffen Elu Yisrael, again, the grapevine will refer to Jewish people, V'chein Ho'omer, as we see clearly, the Pasuk says, that Rashi had quoted the Pasuk before, Geffen Mitzrayim Tasiya, you moved a grapevine from Mitzrayim, and you replanted it in Eretz Yisrael, picked out the goyim over there and replanted it there. When it says three branches, refers to the Shalosh Regalim, Shisrael, Olam Behem, Bechol Shana Roshana, that the Jewish people go up to Yerushalayim every year on those Shalosh Regalim. V'hi Cheferachas Olsan Mitzah, when the Pasuk continues that it blossomed, now here actually he's going to break it up. Everybody else has been saying V'hi Cheferachas Olsan Mitzah as one phrase, which we're going to learn one thing, but V'hi Cheferachas, I saw it blossoming, Olsan Mitzah, it's blooms, flowers came forth. Rashi explains over there that Perach and Netz are two different stages of the growth of the flowers from which the fruits develop, but now Rav Yirmiyahu Ba'aba is going to take those as two different parts. So Hagoyes Habak takes out the words Olsan Nitza over here, because Olsan Nitza is going to be his next part of his Durasha. So V'hi Cheferachas, it was blossoming, means he gives man and shayisur lifris for libris. It's time for the Jewish people to start multiplying, to being fruitful and multiplying. It's time for them to come out of here, to come out of Mitzrayim, and be part of a Rava. As we see that even in Mitzrayim, the Jewish people were multiplying, and then they left Mitzrayim and they continued multiplying even more. So that's the Hicha Ferachas. Also Nitza, and when it says the Nitza has come up, so now the Gemara of Yirmiyahu Ba'aba is darshaning the word Nitza as if it was the word Netzach. Because we often find in Drashas of the Chachamim that He and Ches interchange. They look graphically very similar. They have a similar sound, the original for the pronunciation of Ches, the way the Sa'udim do it even nowadays, is Ches, which is a deep sound in the throat, which is from the same place of articulation as the He. So therefore, the word Nitzach can be darshaned as Netzach. And the word Netzach has many meanings. One of them means the lifeblood. So therefore, it means it's time. So he gives man and Yisrael the goal. It's time for the Jewish people to be redeemed with Hashem's power of Netzach, and where he's going to now drain out the lifeblood of the Mitzrayim and kill them with the various machs. V'cheinu Omer, as we find the pasuk, Hashem describes as far as the Geula HaSidra, he describes how he goes and destroys and tramples Edraim, and so to speak, Hashem's clothing is, so to speak, stained with blood, and he says, V'yev nitzcham am gadai, their lifeblood has squirted onto my clothing, v'chomar bushai adolti, and all of my clothing, everything that I'm clothed and wrapped in, adolti, I have filthed. So Hashem is saying, like, so to speak, I went to Edom and destroyed them and punished them for what they did to the Jewish people throughout all the centuries. and now, so to speak, I'm covered with blood from trampling on them. So we see the word netzach is related to the defeat of the goyim. So now the same thing. Also nitzah means that it's time. Also, the time has come. Nitzah for the lifeblood of the Mitzrayim, not the Jewish people, Chas v'Shalom, of the Mitzrayim to be squeezed out and for them to be punished. And when the pasuk says Yishilu Ashran, for the Jewish people to be redeemed from among them. And when it says that pasuk, by the way, the Chomar Boshei Egolti, actually interestingly, the Zohar, the simple meaning of Egolti is I filthy, but the word Egolti is also has a Shodesh Gaal in it, just to redeem. So it means, in other words, Hashem is saying, like, I went and made myself dirty and tameh in order to redeem you Jewish people. Although the Zohar compares it to the way, like, a Kohen becomes tameh for his various close relatives, one of them being his sister, and the Zohar explains that that's a hint to Hashem going on behalf of we Jewish people, are called by many different metaphors relative to Hashem. One of them was compared to Hashem's sister, so now Hashem goes to save us Jewish people, his sister, and goes and tramples them out and makes himself, so to speak, tameh in order to redeem us. And the pasuk finishes off in the Sanam Ashram's dream. If Shiluach Blaseh Anovin, its clusters ripened into grapes, in Zegiyaz Manash Mitzrayim Lishkes Koysach Ela. It's time for Mitzrayim now to drink the cup of punishment. Is the end of the dream, or the end of that part of the dream. Throughout Tanakh, we always have a common metaphor that uses for Hashem punishing the goyim is making them drink a cup of strong wine that causes them to become numb. So that causes them to become numb and poisoned. So therefore, so now it's time for those grapes to be squeezed out and for that Koysach HaRe'ela to be ready for the Mitzrayim to drink. Behind you, the Omar Rava, this is like what Rava says, Shloisha Koysach HaMuris from Mitzrayim Lama, three times in that dream of Saramashkin, it says the word Kois. He says, V'chois parev yodi, he says, the cup of parev is in my hand. I took the grapes and squeezed them into the cup of parev. And I put the cup on the palm of parev. Now, it says a fourth time over there, kois, as well, when Yosef is interpreting the dream, but in the dream itself, he mentions three times kois. So why? It means, it hints, not just that the cup that the Saramashkin is going to give to Paray, but also it represents three times when Mitzrayim is going to suffer a tremendous downfall, which again is analogized in the Pasuk to drinking a cup of strong wine that numbs them and destroys them. Echad Shashasa b'mei Moshe, one of them they drank in the time of Moshe with the Makkos and Yitzias Mitzrayim. The Echad Shashasa b'mei Paray Nechoy, a second time in the time of Paray Nechoy, when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Bavel and when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Mitzrayim and defeated it. We read actually Nevuos about that. Rashi refers to one Nevuah, Lover Nebuchadnezzar Malach Bavel, which we read as Daf Torah, Parshas Va'era. Of Parshas Bo, rather, and we have a different one from Yechezkel that also gives a nevuah about that same downfall, which we read as Daf Torah for Parshas Va'era. So we have for Va'era and Bo, where it's talking about the downfall of Mitzrayim in the times of Moshe, the first cup. Then we're reading nevuah as Daf Torah that refers to the second cup. The Echad Shasid Alishkis in Kol Oteg Chavim, and the third one that it's going to drink together with all the other Goyish nations, La'asid Lavo, when Hashem is going to punish all the nations for what they did to the Jewish people. The Medrash even brings on it that La'asid Lavo, Hashem is going to tell Paray, better drink up that cup. It's waiting for you. And he's saying, Ribbono Shel'Olam, I drank the cup already, you know the mazeh. And Hashem is going to tell him, what you drank was just a drop compared to what you're getting now. So that's why it says three times kos. In fact, that's one of the explanations why we have Dalim Kosis by the Seder. We have one of them we have to have because one of them we have to have anyway because you have to make Kiddush. But the other three, why do we have three? Why are the three extra ones? One reason is because of these three kosis that it mentions over here. So Amalei, so the Gemara says Amalei Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba. So Rabbi Abba tells Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba. It could be Rabbi Abba, the father of Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba, or maybe it's a different one. Anyway, Kidodesh Lohu Rav, Lahani Troy, Bagadja. You should know, when Rav was explaining these psukim in Agadja, Kavasoch Dodesh Lohu, he was darshaning it the way you did, that the details of the Saramashkin's dream refer to the Golos and Geula of Mitzrayim, and not that he didn't darshan like the other Tanoim who refer it to different other events and things in Jewish history. Okay, more on this topic about the comparison of the Jewish people to a grapevine. Omer of Shimon Lakish, Umazuka Geffen Nimshala. This nation, the Jewish people, are compared to a grapevine, we said, oh, Geffen Nimitzrayim Tasiya. And why? Let's go into the details of what a grapevine has. A grapevine has a lot of different parts to it. Zmurdis Shabbat Eba Balabakli. The branches in it, which are the body of the grapevine and hold everything else up. That refers to the Balabakli. In other words, you don't plant a grapevine for the branches. The primary purpose you plant it for is for the fruit, to eat the fruit or to make wine out of it. But nevertheless, the body of the grapevine, which holds everything else up, including the clusters of grapes, is the branches. So therefore, the balabatim are compared to the branches. It actually points out they do gnos chasadim, they support the poor, they spend money. And they spend money on bribing and whatever the government on behalf of the Jewish people. So therefore, like, they're what makes the Jewish people able to continue going on. And therefore, they're compared to the branches, which are the body of the grapevine. Eshkolos Shabbat of the Talmud Chachamim. The clusters of grapes on the grapevine are referred to the Talmud Chachamim. We actually find in a Gemara and Chagiga that refers to, you have a top level Talmud Chachamim are called Eshkolos, are literally called clusters of grapes, where Eshkol also stands for Isha Kolboi, a person who has everything in him. In particular, the Gemara refers it over there to the earlier generations of Talmud Chachamim, where there was no machlokas even, where everybody learnt the Torah as clearly as it had been given on Har Sinai, and they're referred to as Eshkolos, as clusters. So the cluster is referred to as Talmud Chachamim among Jewish people. Olden Shabbat Elu Amei Aretz. The leaves of the grapevine hint to the Amei Aretz. So the leaves are when it's windy, then they're the ones that take the brunt of it, and they act as a windbreak to help protect the clusters of grapes, so they don't get damaged by the wind or by the sun or by the heat or whatever. So the same way, the Amei Aretz. They plow and plant and harvest and everything, and they provide food for the Talmud Chachamim. So therefore, they're compared to the leaves that help protect the grapevine. And Knoknes Shabbat, and then you have the tendrils on the grapevine, which are the little tiny things that stick out of the sides of the grapevine. So they're not really, the only thing they can do is if you're going to train the vine on a trellis or something, then they help hold it up, but otherwise they don't really have much of a function. This refers to the empty Jews. They're still part of the grapevine, and they can still help it, they can even maybe still help it climb and grow higher, but they themselves, they're not accomplishing much for the grapevine, meaning, again, maybe unless they're helping it grow upward. But we see from what Rish Lakish is saying that the Talmud Chacham do depend on the Amei Aretz. If it weren't for the Amei Aretz farming and producing food, then the Talmud Chacham would have nothing to eat. That's what it points out in the Negeres HaKodesh, Chavav, that loss of lava, it's not going to be like that, then he brings from the Zohar, or he brings and analyzes at length a piece from the Zohar over there that says, lost in love. It won't be that way. On the contrary, the Talmud Chachamim will be bringing down the Ashpa and the Lamaila for everybody else, including the Amei Aretz. But nowadays, we live in a time when, yes, the Talmud Chachamim have to rely on what the Amei Aretz provide for them. Behind it is Shofar Mitam. Thus, we find that they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, expressing this idea. They said, "Liboy rachmin iskalaya al alaya." The clusters of grapes, which again refers to the Talmud Chachamim, should be davening for rachmanus on behalf of the leaves. The Amei Aretz, the Omole alaya, the Miskaimen askalaya. If it weren't for the leaves, the clusters wouldn't be able to exist. Again, if it weren't for the Amei Aretz, the Talmud Chachamim wouldn't be able to sit and learn Torah, and therefore you owe them a debt of gratitude, and you should be davening on their behalf. With that said, there was a Gemara in Pesachim that talks about very negatively about the Amei Aretz and says terrible things about them, and if they hate the Talmud Chacham and all. So that is, there is a type of Amei Aretz like that. But you were talking about the run of the mill Amei Aretz, where they didn't have a chance to learn Torah for whatever reason. They don't know much, but they're still solid Flum Yidden, and they respect the Talmud Chachamim, and as we're saying, they provide food for them. Here's another drasha related to Yitzias Mitzrayim. Hashem tells the Novi Hoshea at the beginning of a sefer. Hashem tells him to go marry Ashes is Nunim and have Yalde is Nunim. He should marry a woman who has a promiscuous past. The Gemara tells us in Pesachim a whole background to the story that Hoshea was saying that Hashem tells Hoshea the Jewish people are doing Averis, and Hoshea says, okay, so Hashem trade him in for another nation, and Hashem makes Hoshea go through a whole thing with his family life to show that you can't do that, even if your wife is unfaithful, and even if you don't know where your children are really yours. Nevertheless, you don't divorce your wife so easily, in the same way Hashem is not planning to divorce the Jewish people. Chas v'shalom. Then Hashem continues in Perek Gimel of Hoshea. He tells him also to go marry another woman, Ahuvas Reya, woman of office, another woman who's loved by another man and who's promiscuous. And again, this represents how the Jewish people are acting in Hoshea's times. And the pasuk says, "Va'ekreholi." Literally, let's translate it literally. He says, "Va'ekreholi." I bought her for myself. Bachamisha also cost it with 15 silver coins. And then the pasuk continues that it was v'chomer sa'odim v'lesach sa'odim, and a chomer of barley and a lesach of barley. So a chomer is also known as a kor. It consists of 30 saw. A lesach has half a kor, so that's a 15 saw. So in other words, in context, then again, the pasuk is referring to what Hoshea did with this woman that Hashem told him to marry, how he acquired her, and what he gave her for kedushin. But now the Gemara is understanding that it's also referring to how, so to speak, that Hashem acquired us Jewish people as his wife, because that's a nimshal that Hashem is getting at over there. And what are the 15 silver coins and the 45 lesach of barley represents, and why are they divided into a chomer and a lesach? So I'm going to give him the same Shimon and Yehoshua. First of all, in Ira Elulot and Mechira, the word for Akreha means is a lotion of selling. Shinema and the Kivri Asher Korisi Li, as we find that Yaakov tells Yosef to bury him in the Malas Machpela, in the grave, he says, which Korisi Li, which I acquired for myself. You have a Rashi points out there on the Pasuk, and then over here on the Gemara, that we know the whole thing, that Yaakov and Esav would have both inherited equal shares in it, but Yaakov bought out Esav's share and gave an enormous amount of money for it. So Yaakov is telling Yosef, I bought it fair and square, and I want you to bury me there. As it is, we know that Esav anyway came and tried to protest and prevent them from burying him, and they have the whole story over there, the whole famous story over there. Anyway, the point is, in our pasuk also, when it says, Rehali, means I acquired for myself. So what's Bahamisha also? What's the 15? So Zechamisha also ben Nissan, Shema Nigel, Yisrael Mitzrayim. That's the 15th of Nissan on which the Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim. So Hashem is saying, I acquired the Jewish people for myself on the 15th of Nissan. When he says Kesef, he says 15 silver coins. What does the silver represent? Eilu Tzadikim. The silver represents Tzadikim. V'cheinu Omer, as we find, Tzadikim are referred to metaphorically as silver. A pasuk in Mishlei says, "Shlur haKesef lokach biyadeh." He has taken the bundle of silver in his hand. The context over there in Mishlei is a whole extended mashal about an isha zayna who tries to tempt a man into being mizana with her, and he tells her, "Don't worry, my husband's not around. He took his bundle of silver and is gone. He's not going to be back for a while." The nimshal of it is one of the meanings of the nimshal of it that Rashi refers to, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, is that the nations of Ammon and Moab were trying to convince Nebuchadnezzar to go attack the Jewish people. They were always inveterate enemies of the Jewish people, and now they have the opportunity. They're trying to convince Nebuchadnezzar to go attack the Jewish people. So Nebuchadnezzar says, don't they have tzaddikim among them, I'm afraid. So he says, they tell him in the words, in the metaphor of the pasuk, the man is not in his house, meaning the man referring to Hashem, is not in his house. Hashem has abandoned the Beis HaMikdash and the Jewish people because of their Averis. And so he says, fine, what about the, so first he says, I'm afraid of Hashem. So they tell him, Eino Ish Bevesei. So he says, but what about they that have tzaddikim? They'll evoke Hashem's Rachmanis. And they tell him, Sir, Hashem took the bundle of silver in his hand, the tzaddikim who lived at that time, Hashem has since caused them to die off, and now there aren't any. And with those kinds of arguments, they were able to convince Nebuchadnezzar that it's worthwhile, and he is going to be successful in defeating the Jewish people. So we see that in that pasuk, the tzaddikim are referred to as silver. The word kesef is also related to the word like nichsef, nichsafta, to yearn greatly, and tzaddikim, so it refers to the tzaddikim who yearn greatly for other course, and so forth. So now, so far, in other words, we're understanding the pasuk, Hashem is saying, I acquired the Jewish people for myself on the 15th of Nisan because of the tzaddikim. Then he continues with the Chomer Sa'odim, and then what's Chomer Sa'odim, the Lesach Sa'odim? So again, a Chomer and a Lesach together equals 45. Sa'abari, Elam Memhei Tzadikim, Sha'olam Iskayim Behem. This refers to, at all times, there are 45 Tzadikim that the world it continues to exist because of them. Maharsha points out, first we're comparing the Tzadikim to silver, now we're comparing them to barley. So he says, because silver refers to when the Jewish people are in Eretz Yisrael, then the tzaddikim are referred to as silver. That's the pasuk, Tzera kesef lochach v'yaleh. But when the Jewish people are scattered and strewn into gavos, like the way you scatter and strew barley in order to plant it and harvest a crop, then therefore now the tzaddikim are being compared to barley. So 45 tzaddikim that the world exists because of them. The Enya Day and Shloshim, but now the pasuk doesn't just say 45, it breaks them up into 30 and 15. So, the Enya Game, Shloshim Khan, the Hamisha Asa Be'eretz Yisrael, being Shloshim Be'eretz Yisrael, the Hamisha Asa Khan, does it mean there are 30 of them here in Bavel and 15 in Eretz Yisrael, or the other way around? Clearly, again, there's meant to be a distinction between Eretz Yisrael and the rest of the Jewish world, but where are the 30 and where are the 15? So now we have Shu Omer, so now you have a different process that's relevant to this. The Novi Zechariah also has a moshel where he tells about he gives a moshel about the Jewish people as Hashem's flock of sheep, which is a common metaphor in many places in Tanakh. And then you have an expression. He says therefore, Echa Shloishim Akosim. He says Hashem said, Hovu Schori, like so to speak, give me my pay, give me my wages for what I'm doing for you. And so the Navi says, Echa Shloishim Akosim. And again, he's speaking in Hashem's name, Echa Shloishim Akosim. I took 30 silver coins, Va'ashlechosim, based Hashem al Yotzer, and I threw it, I deposited it into the house of Hashem to the Yotzer. We're taking the simple meaning of Yotzer means a potter, but here we're taking Yotzer as Moloshan Oitzer, a treasury. Rashi explains like this. Rashi explains, if you look at the context of the psukim, that'll be in a minute. Okay, so we see that he's referring to Shloshim Achesef, and he's referring to putting them in the house of Hashem, which is in Eretz Yisrael, heavy owner. So therefore, that pasuk clarifies for us Shloshim Eretz Yisrael, B'chamisha Osakan, of the 45 tzaddikim, 30 of them are going to be in Eretz Yisrael, and 15 of them are going to be here in Bavel, or anywhere else in the Jewish world. Amar Abaya, and Abaya says, you want to know where you're going to find the ones in Eretz Yisrael, they're not necessarily going to be so conspicuous. V'rubayhu, most of those 30, mishtatzi, b'vei knishta, the tusi apta, you're going to find them in the shul, under the outbuilding. So in other words, like you have an outbuilding, like a very humble place, or there are different other explanations what an apsa is exactly, but it's like some kind of inconspicuous place, and then you have a shul underneath that. So in other words, the point is these tzaddikim are tzaddikim nistorim, and not necessarily does everybody know who they are. With that said, by the way, I think that everyone once talked about that even when we talk about the Lamed Vav tzaddikim nistorim, here Al Gemara has mentioned 45, but the Rebbe I think once pointed out that tzaddik nister doesn't have to be like the classic tzaddik nister that we think of, that he's working as a humble wood chopper or a milkman or what have you, and he's really secretly a tzaddik. It can actually be somebody who is known to the world as a tzaddik, but the world doesn't realize the extent of what a tzaddik he is. So that would be that can also be over here. So of these 30 that were saying that they're in the shul under the outbuilding, we can mean, in other words, many of them are inconspicuous and they seem to be just ordinary people, and really they're tzaddikim gmurim. And it can be that some of them are actually known to the world of tzaddikim, but they don't realize how great they are. Thus Zechariah says in his nevuah, the whole pasuk goes, where the previous pasuk goes, Va'omer aleihem, so I said to them, this is Hashem speaking, and who is the them? Rashi explains this is referring to the goyim. Earlier in the pasuk, you have the Navi saying, Va'eka Hashem describes how, so to speak, he had two staffs with which to run, with which to lead the flock, or the Jewish people, and more generally the world. You have one called Makal Noyam and the other Makal Chovlin, a staff of pleasantness and a staff of harm. And then he describes, he says, Va'eka Hashemachlius Noyam. He says, I took my stick called Noyam, Va'egda Oisa, and I broke it. I chopped it up. Lahofer is Grisi, Ashokaratius Kolam. to show that I'm breaking my covenant that I made with all the nations. Meaning, in other words, Hashem is saying, till now, other nations, I've been treating you guys with kid gloves. I've been treating you with a staff of gentleness, but now it's not going to be anymore. So then the pasuk continues. He tells them, "Va'omer aleihem," I said to them, if it's good in your eyes, then give me my wages. And if not, then hold back. And it's basically, in terms of the mashal, Hashem is saying, give me the tzaddikim. They were living among you, and it's time for you to return them, and then let them come back to Eretz Yisrael. And if not, if you're going to hold back, then you're going to be in trouble. And the pasuk says, they weighed out my wages 30 silver coins. So in other words, Hashem is saying, return, you all this time, you were the shepherds who were supposed to be taking care of the Jewish people among you. And as the psukim described over there in Zechariah, that you have not been doing that at all. You've been terribly mistreating and taking advantage of them. Now it's time to return the wages. Now it's time to return, in particular, the tzaddikim that you've been holding among you. So we see that the tzaddikim are compared to 30 silver coins. And then those tzaddikim are set for all time. In Jewish people, there's always going to be 30 tzaddikim among the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Here, Marsha points out, again, now that we're talking about tzaddikim in Eretz Yisrael, then we're back to the metaphor of tzaddikim as silver, rather than when we're talking about tzaddikim scattered all over the world, then we compare them to barley. Okay, so that's one explanation of the Shloshim Kosef, of the 30 silver coins. Of that pasuk, it refers to 30 tzaddikim in Eretz Yisrael in every generation. Rabbi Yehuda says a different explanation. Eivish Shloshim Tzaddiki Umas Ha'olam, Sho Umas Ha'olam Iskayim Aleihem. This refers to 30 tzaddikim of Umas Ha'olam, that the Umas Ha'olam, that the nations of the world continue to exist by virtue of them. Now, on the face of it, then that means, on the face of it, though, that on the face of it, that means non-Jewish tzaddikim. Relatively speaking, among the tzaddikim, there are, among the goyim also, there are ones who are relatively tzaddikim, and for their sake, Hashem allows the rest of the nations of the world to exist. On the other hand, Rashi over here, the way the Bach corrects it, seems to imply that we're talking about Jewish tzaddikim, and again, we're just saying in a different way. Before we were focusing on them as the tzaddikim of Jewish people, Rabbi Yehuda is pointing out that also all the nations continue to exist by the fact that these tzaddikim live among them and their schos protect them. So Maharsha says that no, we're actually talking about tzaddikim of Umas Ha'olam. So in other words, you have two different things. You have the ones that are the tzaddikim of the Umas Ha'olam by Yishkelu Aschori. They weighed out my wages. At all times, among the Goyim as well, there will be 30 people who are relatively tzaddikim. Then you have the other 30 where it said, Hashlichehu al Yotzer, that I threw it into the Yotzer, into the Oitzer, the treasury of Hashem. That refers to Jewish tzaddikim. So that's another explanation of the 30. Ula Omar, Ula says another explanation. It refers again to the Chosim of the Goyim, but it refers to a different kind of schus. This refers to 30 mitzvahs that Bnei Noach accepted on themselves. Now, where do you get 30 mitzvahs? Rashi says there's no. Rashi hadn't found an explanation of what the 30 are. So there are a couple of sources that give lists. There's the small but a costly Gaon, one of the later Gaonim from about 1,000 years ago, gave a list, although I don't remember if the list was complete. It's printed in the back of Encyclopedia Talmudis on the volume on Bnei Noach. Then you have another list was drawn up by the Ramah Mifano, and then in a sefer Asara Ma'amoris, and he lists them all out. Basically, what he says is, I mean, we know you have seven mitzvahs from the Noach, but each one of them branches out into various ones. The same way as by us Jews, for example, there's not one general mitzvah of Elias. There's a bunch of individual Elias. The same way, for example, let's say Avodah Zarah, and Avodah Zarah for us also includes dozens of mitzvahs. The same way, the Ramah Mifano says that, for example, under Avodah Zarah, you also have the various types of magic that they're not allowed to do, and that they're not allowed to sacrifice their children to Moloch. So just from Avodah Zarah alone, he counts 10 mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Avodah Zarah generally, and then 9 sub-mitzvahs that comes out of it. And he goes through all the other mitzvahs and does the same thing. You have like that as well. So you end up with a list of 30. Anyway, so 30 mitzvahs that Bnei Noach accepted on themselves, the ain mekayim and el shloisha. But you should know, says Ula, nowadays they're being mekayim only 3 out of the 30. What are they? One of them is they don't write a ksuba for two males, meaning they do mishkav zohar. That's very rampant by them, but at least they don't go and publicly bless such things and make them like official marriages. What that would mean nowadays, when unfortunately they do that, is a whole other question. Anyway, the second one is they don't weigh out the flesh of the dead in the butcher shops. So it actually says two explanations. One is that it means human flesh. So they may eat it, but they don't publicize it to the extent where they're going to go and sell it publicly. The other explanation, it actually says, is psalames would be the meat of an animal that died on its own. Even they have some standards, and they don't eat that. Which is an interesting thing. There's a lot of longness about that, because on the face of it, goy don't have a mitzvah of shchita, and in fact, the pasuk says that if you have a nevela, you can give it to a goy to eat, implying that's not a problem for them to eat. This also bears on, we learned yesterday, Tosfos had discussed when the Gemara had said that Yosef tells Menashe to prepare meat for the brothers and pralahem beis hashchita, uncover the beis hashchita and show them that it was properly killed. So we said, we learned yesterday, one explanation of Tosfos was that we're not talking about the shchita, because they were b'nei noach themselves. They weren't required to shecht yet. It just means that he had to do mechira. He had to do some method of killing the animal and to show them that that was done, and it didn't die on its own. So it would come out from that, that in fact goyim are in fact also to eat an animal that died on its own, and they're only mutter to eat if they don't have to do shchita, but they can only eat it if the animal was killed in some way. So in fact, there's a lot of discussion about that and a lot of longness about that, and how do we understand the pasuk about giving a nevela to a goy? One explanation is, in fact, it means if you were trying to shecht, in fact, Targum Yonason on the pasuk says, when it says, loisteifu kol nevela, you can give it to a goy. So Targum Yonason paraphrases it and says it means when you were shechting and you botched the shechting, then in the shchita, then you can give it to a goy. Fine, but if it died on its own, then you couldn't. So there's quite a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of that. Anyway, so that would be the second mitzvah that the goyim keep, that at least, even if they do eat it, at least they're not weighing it out and selling it publicly. And the third one, says Ola, that the goyim continue to observe, is they do honor the Torah. So that's another, that's another meaning of the 30. They're supposed to have 30 schosim, but in practice, Ola says they're keeping only 3 of them. So that ends this section of Agadah, and now we're going to go back to halacha matters. So in the Mishnah we had said the din of gidan nosha does not apply to a bird, because the Mishnah had said she'ain like calf, because it doesn't have that calf hayorich, that spoon shaped muscle on the thigh. So the Gemara says, in Isle, we see a bird does have a muscle on the upper part of its thigh. And the answer is, Isle le ovil. It has, but it's not rounded. You look at a piece of chicken you buy in the store, you have the thigh of the chicken. It's not rounded. It's not a rounded shape like you have on an animal. But on a person, it's more of a flat shape. So then, Gidanosha, specifically, our calf ayorit, only when it resembles a calf, a spoon in shape. So, in that connection, Rabbi Yirmiya now has a question. Suppose you find a bird that does have a round muscle over there. Or Isle the behemoth of Loyogil. Or what if you have an animal which has that muscle, but it's not rounding? What would be the din? Would Ginanosha apply to them? Bosa Judea's linen. Do we go according to the individual specimen? This particular bird has a calf, therefore Ginanosha applies. This particular animal does not have a calf, therefore Ginanosha does not apply. Would it be that way? Do we go according to the whole species, and the species as a whole, by birds does not have a calf, and then by animals it does, and therefore it's going to apply? And the Gemara says, take them. So the halacha is, if you find a bird that has a calf, then you can't eat the gidan nosha of it. However, a person wouldn't be chayav malchus for it, because you can't be sure that it's actually also. Okay. Next. The Mishnah said, v'noyeg b'shlil. We said that the issue of gidan nosha applies to a shlil, to an unborn baby found alive in the womb. And then we had Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that, no, it does not apply to a shlil. Now, the Mishnah had also said, the Mishnah had said that it's chelav is mutter. Now, when it says it's chelav is mutter, meaning of the baby, are we talking about, is this part of Rabbi Yehuda's statement? Is Rabbi Yehuda saying the gidanosha and the chelav of this baby is mutter? Or is he saying the gidanosha is mutter, and then the Tanakama is also agreeing, and everybody's agreeing that the chelav is mutter? So that's what we're going to discuss now. So, almost Shmuel, the chelbe mutter, the divrei hakol. Shmuel says when it says that the chelbe of it is mutter, means according to everybody. So the Gemara says chelbe demai. Which chelbe are you talking about? Ilema de shlil. Do you mean all the chelbe of the shlil, the regular chelbe, which we're going to start learning? We're going to start learning tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about what areas of the body contain chelbe that has to be removed. So do you mean the chelav, the body chelav of the shlil as a whole, the chelav on the stomachs and on the kidneys and so on and on the flanks and so on and so forth? So what do you mean that everybody agrees that it's fine? We see that there's a machlokas about whether it's mutter or not. Titania, we learn in a brisa, noyeg the shlil, the chelbay also divid a mayor. Gid anosha applies to a shlil, and the chelav of it is also to eat, says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ainam noig v'shlil. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it doesn't apply. Gid anosha does not apply to the shlil. V'chel b'mutter, and the fact of it is mutter. So you see that in the Mishnah, we assume the Mishnah and the Braisa are telling us the same thing. So therefore, when it says in the Mishnah, the chelbe mutter is not l'kulei alma, is not according to everybody. It's specifically a continuation of Rabbi Yehuda's statement. So you see now Tosfos points out the Gemara had assumed that there would be a reason maybe to say that all of them agree the chelav of it is mutter, because as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you don't offer the chelav of the shlil on the mizbeach. If you're bringing a shlamim and then it has a live baby in the womb, you're not going to offer the fact of that baby on the mizbeach. So therefore, you could have argued that maybe it's not also to eat. But we're saying now that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir disagree about that. But Omer Rabbi Elazar, Omer Rabbi Oshia, so Rabbi Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Oshia to explain the Braisa, Machloikas the Ben Tisha, the Machloikas is where the baby is after a full term 9 month pregnancy. V'holach Rabbi Meir l'shitase, Rabbi Yehuda l'shitase. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are being consistent with their respective opinions. Namely, we learned earlier in the fourth parak that Rabbi Meir holds that when the baby is found alive in the womb after a full term pregnancy, then you need to shecht it separately. It's not mutter with his mother's shechta. Well, therefore, the chelev and the gidiv, it would be also just like with any other animal. But Rabbi Yehuda is going to shitasa, where he held that you don't need to shecht the baby anyway, and therefore he would say. And he learned from the words babahema or sechelu, whatever's in the animal you can eat. Then it means even the chelav and the gidanosha of the baby. Now Tosfos points out that we have the braisa telling us that what's Rabbi Elazar's chiddush exactly? And the answer is without that, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, the word chelboy can mean not the body chelav of the animal as a whole, but rather specifically the chelav around the gidanosha, and we would have thought that that's what it meant. So Rabbi Elazar is clarifying for us that no, it means that he's holding the actual chelav of the body cavity of the animal. So the Gemara says that, so again, we can't say that the chelev of the shlil should be mutter according to everybody, when clearly the Braisa is saying that not. The elach chelbe de gid, so maybe we're just talking specifically about the chelev around the gid anosha, where you have, there's a layer of fat around the gid anosha of any animal, so maybe then Shmuel is saying that you're allowed to eat it. No, on mitzvah de tzvigibah. Again, there's machlokas about it as well. When it comes to the gidanosha, you have to dig around wherever it is. The gidanosha, as we learned before, it spreads out. Branches of it go spread throughout the entire leg. So you have to go after every single branch of it, and you have to dig in. Now, you have part of it runs along the surface, and there you can just remove it. But then you have parts where then you have parts where it gets embedded into the muscles, and you have to open it up and cut them out as well. The choice of shaman mi'ikroi, and also you also have to cut out the fat around it from the root all of the fat that surrounds it, even where it's embedded into the muscles. Divrei Rav Meir, that's how Rav Meir learns. Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda says, no, going on me, shofi, all you need to do is cut it off, the gid and the fat, only with the shofi. The shofi means the rounded muscle over there, the outer surface of the muscle. So you have to cut off and actually explain specifically the chelev. So the chelev that's visible when you look at the shofi, then you need to cut that out because maras the ayin, so it doesn't look like you're eating the gid anosha. But Rashi explains, according to Rav Yehuda, the deeper veins of fat, as well as of the gid anosha itself, according to Rav Yehuda, would be mutter. In other words, basically, Tosfos explains, according to that way of looking at it, it would mean that Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are saying, wherever the Gid Anosha itself is also, so is the fat. So Rav Meir holds every single branch of the Gid Anosha with the fat that's associated with it is also, and Rav Yehuda would say, only the parts that are visible on the surface of the thigh muscle, is also, and the fat over there is also as well. So Tosfos brings that's apparently how Rashi would understand, but Tosfos says that no. According to Tosfos, Goyim Ma'im HaShoifi means Rav Yehuda says just as far as the fat. The fat specifically, since as the Gemara is going to say now, it's only a minhag not to eat it, actually Tosfos says Goyim Ma'im would refer to the Gid Anosha itself. The Gid Anosha itself, Rav Yehuda holds, it's enough to just cut off the area, you have to remove the area that's on the surface of the muscle, but you don't have to dig in. But in any case, we see they're arguing about the chelav of it. So you see, according to the mayor, none of that chelav of the gid anosha is mutter. How can you say that everybody agrees that chelav is mutter? So even if Shmuel was referring only to the chelav of the gid anosha, it wouldn't work to say that everybody agrees it's mutter when the mayor was saying that it's also. Rabbi Yehuda is also agreeing that some of it is also, but the difference is Rabbi Meir says you have to remove it, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's really only because Mara sign. So the Gemara says, La'odam chelbe the gid. In fact, Shmuel was talking about the chelbe of the gid. And he's saying that minat Torah, when he says that the divrei hakol mutter, he means minat Torah, everybody would agree with mutter. Shmuel will agree, but Rav Meir, midrabban also, that Rav Meir will hold that the fact around the gid anosha is also drabban. D'tanya, as in fact we learned in a braisa, which we learned before, the shamnei mutter, the fact around the gid anosha is mutter. Yisrael kedoshim no'agaboy isser, but Jews who are holy have decided to take on themselves an isser to not eat it. Now, my love, Rav Meir, now on the face of it, that braisa would be according to Rav Meir. So we see that Rav Meir would say it is mutter min haTorah, and it's only a minhag not to eat it. The Omar, mutter min haTorah, also min haRabbanan. He would say then that it's mutter to eat min haTorah, but it's also min haRabbanan, and therefore Shmuel is telling us that in fact it would have been also min haTorah, but then at some point Jews accepted on themselves not to eat it, and it became an official din haRabbanan that you're not allowed to. But the Gemara says, Mimai, but how do you know that Brai says, according to the mayor, Dumer of Yehuda, maybe that Brai says, according to the Yehuda, maybe the Yehuda would say, Vidarabaisa, you only have to remove the surface fat. But Midirabbanan, you have to dig in deeper. In other words, Tosfos explains the question is that if the Tana of the, you could say the Tana of the Braisa is Rav Meir, but you could also say maybe the Tana of the Braisa, Rav Yehuda holds that the fat is also only the Rabbanon. So why do you say you only have to cut off the gid? Is because cutting off the fat is going to depend on this minhag. In other words, when we say Yisroel Kedoshim Nogu by Yisr, we would say it doesn't mean that universally Jews don't eat that fat. Some do, some don't. So those who don't will have to cut it out, but those who don't have that minhag are entitled to eat it. So maybe the braisa is going like that. But Rav Meir would hold that fat around the gid anosha is actually also daraisa. And then what does Shmuel mean when he says that everybody agrees the chelbe mutter? And the answer is, let's talk about that. You can't think that way. The Tanya, because we have another relevant braisa. A braisa says, gid anosha machatat achra b'chol makom shahu. The gid anosha, you have to dig in everywhere and move all the branches and sub-branches of it, wherever it is, throughout the leg. The shamne mutter, however, the fact of it is mutter. Now, man shamat le'di islay chatita. Now, who do you see says you have to dig around for branches of the gid anosha. Reb Meir. That's Reb Meir, because according to Reb Yehuda, you don't even need that. According to Reb Yehuda, you just have to cut off the part that's on the surface of the muscle. And yet it says that the fat is mutter. So in other words, so what do you mean? What do you mean it's mutter when we said before the mayor holds its also? So now we can understand that this braisa is talking about midaraisa uri mutter, and the previous braisa was talking about that it's midrabon and it's also. So that clarifies that yes, when Shmuel is saying the chelbe mutter, he doesn't mean the fat of the shlivel, he means the fat of the gidhan roshe in general, and midaraisa it's mutter, and midrabon and midrabon and it's also. So in other words, all the braises that we brought are all according to the mayor, and each one tells the Ritva explains. Each one tells us a chiddush. The last braisa tells us that the fact of the gid is mutter minatora, but then the second braisa had said that it is osir from Yisro Kedoshim, and then you would think that maybe therefore that it depends on different places of minhag, like Tosfos says. Therefore, no, the braisa brought the first braisa, they actually cut it out completely because of this minhag. You actually have to remove it completely everywhere you can find it in the leg. And that is the halacha. So the halacha is like a mayor in that, so you do in fact, which is why, again, we very rarely have the back part of the animal used as kosher food because it's so hard to cut out all those parts. So let's continue a little bit more talking about what part of the gid is mutter and hasser. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel by Marta Amar Rav, like Osir Torah Ela Knutmas Shabai. The Torah is not asking the entire Gidan Nasha, only the little tendrils that branch out of it. In other words, Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel by Marta is saying this: the Gidan Nasha itself, the sciatic nerve itself, is hard. It's like wood, so it's not edible anyway. So therefore, the Torah wouldn't be mechayev a person for eating that. So when you have the softer parts, as the muscle, as the nerves become smaller and thinner, and they start spreading throughout the leg, so those are soft, and those you can say those are nice and tan. But the gid itself, that you find the top of the gid that you find by the muscle of the top of the leg, that's hard. That's hard, like wood. Why would a person need a rebutzal question? Well, my mouth just says a person's not chayev for eating for that. Ula Omar, on the other hand, Ula says, no, doesn't matter. Eitu, it may very well be like wood. Vatoda asauta, vatoda chiva olav, and yet the Torah is asking it and making a person high of malchus. It boils down to the question that we touched on at the beginning of the parak, and we're going to have in more detail later in the parak about yesh beginim menosin tam or ein beginim menosin tam. So Rabbi Yitzchak Hashmuel Mamarta, quoting Nav, is going to say then when there's machlokas, yesh begid menos in tam, the machlokas is going to be about those branches. The gid itself, everybody would agree, says Rav, it's wood, and it's like wood, and a person is not fired for it. Whereas Ula would say, it doesn't matter, even if the whole machlokas is about the gid itself, even according to him, the branches might well be mutter, but in the given minos in time, and it itself is like wood, and yet the Torah is machayev mamas. Gemara says, Omar Abaye, Kavah say the Ula Mestamna. So Abaye says, it seems logical to say like the way Ula explains it. The Omar of Sheshes, Omar of Asi, Chutin, Shebechelev, there were threads of fat or whatever that are found in the chalev that covers the stomach. Asurin ve'in chayovan alehen. They're also to eat because they're embedded in the fat over there. But a person is not chayev koras for eating them. Shebakulya and I skipped a couple of lines. Chutin shebachelev asurin. These threads that go through the chalev, so in other words, you have the chalev itself, a fat, and then you have threads of muscle or whatever that go through them, those are also in chayev and alayim, but a person is not chayev for eating them. So we see when the Torah says it's also keeps chalev, it doesn't include the chutin itself, doesn't include these threads that go through it. The same way, when the Torah says don't eat the gid anosha, then at least on a daraisa level, it does not include the knoikness, it does not include these branches of it, and the daraisa, those would be mutter. Tosfos brings from Shirotis, the Ramachoi Goin, a sefer from one of the early Goinim, that says that even though they were saying the stabra ka'ula, and that would mean on daraisa level, the knoikness, the branches are not osir, but midirabanan, they are actually osir. So in other words, the implication is Ula himself would say they're mutu even midirabanan. But the halacha is not like that. The halacha is they are osir midirabanan. So that is in fact why we, why it's very hard to kasher and eat the leg of an animal is because of that, because you have to go for all those knoikness, and we said before also for the fat around it. So now we're gonna digress from this matter of Gidan Nosha for a while, and we're gonna talk about, we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll talk about chaylev, now that we mentioned that there's chaylev and then there's chutin, there's thread of other material that runs through them, so we're gonna start going in detail through what things exactly are also as chaylev versus various other isurim in the animal. Again, all these things are things that you have to do very careful nicker. Schneidering, it's called in Yiddish, to remove them, and if a shochet or a bodek gets careless, then you have real problems. There's actually just something that was circulating around recently where there was a schlachtoi someplace in Paraguay or something where they found that they were careless and left some of these things in the meat, and then you have real problems as far as kashrus with it. So we'll start talking about all that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.